You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website RickAckerman.com. He's speaking to us from South Florida. Welcome back to the show, Rick.
Always a pleasure, Jim. I appreciate your inviting me on.
How would you describe what's happening on the stock markets right now?
Well, I think we're in a bear rally, but it's not. I'm not saying that in the way I would have in the past, being the collapsitarian that I've always been. It's possible to look at the market and see, even if you're a permabear, that it might be in the throes of just a monumental rally. And it really depends on what Trump achieves. You know, his agenda has been so radical that, I don't see anything bad in what he's doing. Even if they wind up having to shoot a couple of district court judges, there's so many things that he's doing that are really unexceptionable. They're inarguably good things, such as cutting back on the bureaucracy and he's not quite a budget. He's not quite frugal yet. You know, we're sort of in a transitional period where there are a lot of budget cuts being made. But Trump definitely wants to put some stimulus into the economy with cheap money. But his big picture is brilliant, even to the point of bringing manufacturing back to the U.S. So it's hard for me to get full on board with the collapsitarian idea that we're all going to hell in a handbasket.
Now, of course, in Canada, if you suggest shooting judges, that's considered hate speech. You can go to jail for that.
Yeah, fortunately, we don't put people in jail for that, certainly not anymore. Their lives would have been ruined before by the forces of woke. But and I don't mean that literally, going out and shooting judges, but we need to do something about them, because we can't have these little district court pissants ruling the whole country and overriding the executive and legislative branches.
Mm-hmm. So you're bullish on the markets right now, and if this rally continues, are we going to be setting record highs again?
Only up to a point. You know, the problem really with imagining a golden age of Trump is that the time element. You know, I think that virtually everything that he's doing, and I mean everything, has not just positive implications for our economic future and our lives, but you know, world-shakingly positive implications. So the problem is that we have to get from here to there, navigating some very difficult shoals. And I think the most significant of them is the ongoing collapse in commercial real estate. And some of my colleagues who are out there just getting very, very bullish, they love Trump, maybe not necessarily Trump the man, but certainly Trump the leader, the politician, the doer. But we still have to get by this enormous hump in commercial real estate. And I think the last time we spoke, we talked, you and I, about how the forces of deflation and collapse are already, to me, it's a given in the Washington, D.C. area. So that's one of the most pumped up regions of the country in terms of real estate prices, and there have been enough layoffs and furloughs and closings of different agencies that the Washington, D.C. and the surrounding suburbs, there has to be a deflationary collapse there. And whether or not the country can withstand that kind of blow, and it's not like all the other regions are well fortified against problems. You go to the West Coast, of course, and San Francisco still has a commercial real estate collapse yet to play out, and it's the same thing in many other cities. So that's a big thing, and of course, most of the real estate has not been marked down. It's all been carried at inflated values that are, I guess, hopeful that the economy will come roaring back and that people will come back to their offices to work. That ain't happening. So there's a huge, let me add 11 more huges to that, overhang of vacant space, and I don't think we're going to get past it. And it may be joined by a collapse in residential real estate, if only because prices have gotten so high that it's a situation where Wile E. Coyote has gone off the edge of the cliff, and he just hasn't looked down.
Now, federal workers have been told to return to the office, but a lot of them were directed to places like Subway sandwich shops. Were they supposed to go to work there?
Well, good for them. Those are the only jobs that are available. You know, I mean, you can editorialize as some.
No, I'm saying when they were told to return to work, they were asked, "Well, what address?" Because they've all been working from home. What address do I go to? And they've been given things like closed school libraries with no desks, no computers, or in some cases, a Subway store that you buy sandwiches at. They're supposed to go in there, and is that their federal workplace? That's all I'm asking. It's like they're not prepared for people to come back.
Well, I was being facetious when I said that's where they're going to wind up. I guess not facetious, really, because the only job for half these people that are being laid off in Washington is Subway sandwich shop. And the reason being, you know, the fat, do-nothing layer of bureaucracy that has been virtually eliminated from private companies has continued to flourish up until a couple months ago in the public sector. So all of these middle management jobs in Washington, and maybe like 85% of them are that, have become superfluous in the private economy. So there are no jobs for those people. They're going to all have to be retrained to make a good sub sandwich, a good hoagie, they call them. I'm from Atlantic City, which is where they make real subs. And so I would suggest that they send them all to Atlantic City for training to make a decent submarine sandwich.
Yeah. Also, with a lot of these federal workers, they call it March Madness in Canada as the fiscal year wraps up. Government departments have a budget, and if they don't spend all the budget in that fiscal year, then they'll have their budget reduced. And because every manager in government wants to grow their fiefdom, it seems, they go out and buy expensive chairs for their office or redecorate it to use up all the budget, even though they don't have to because they got new chairs last year.
Well, that whole charade has been so fully exposed by Musk that it's just not going to happen this time. You know, the stories, we were getting those stories 6 weeks ago about how each department is going to try to spend as much as it can while it's still operating under Biden's rules. But we've learned already that Trump's rules took effect immediately. So they're not going to get away with that this time, to spend out their budgets, because a lot of these departments that would do that spending are either they've been eliminated or they're in the process.
What's going on with gold? Is it going to continue its skyrocket ride?
Yes, it will. The leash is off gold, really, and I guess it's most evident because you finally have the mining shares moving. You know, these mining companies, the CEOs of any one of them could say, look, and I used to do mining tours with a group with Al Carlin and a bunch of guys, and we would get to some site. I remember seeing an exploration company site out in Nevada. They'd leased a huge amount of land, and the CEO of the company, who was a mining guy, he had an engineering degree, and he just kind of with a flourish of the hand said, all of this land here is ours to exploit Nevada's silver resources. And there was just so much there. You're taking in you know, silver mountains to the horizon. And all the mining executives, they've been in that position of knowing that they've got proven reserves of X and great core samples and this and that, but they haven't been able to get anyone's attention with values. Finally, after 14 years, the recognition that maybe these mining companies are worth something. And as it should be, the mining companies have really led the way up. And I really think we're just at the beginning of the move before they become fully valued.
Now, do you recall, what was it, about 12 years ago, people were telling us gold is nothing but a bunch of shiny rocks, no need to pay any attention to it. What swung things around?
Gold's just, you know, it's just been going up, 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 up. And it finally popped through 3,000. And if nothing else had gotten your attention before then, it certainly has now. So it's just a good place to be. There's a lot of value in gold and silver that's still in the ground.
Is silver going to get more attention now?
Oh, I don't know. I would say, you know, they're going to, the excitement, I think, will go in and out of, alternate maybe between gold and silver. But of course, silver's big blow off way down the road is a late stage event. So it doesn't really matter whether you're in silver or gold right now. There are reasons really that favor either, but you're not going to lose if you're in bullion.
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Rick, what's going on with cryptocurrencies? Do you pay attention to them?
I pay attention to them. You know, I think they're garbage, and it's a hoax. It's a huge hoax, and nobody in the world is going to tell me that Bitcoin has any value. We've been over this 3 or 4 times, but a friend of mine who's, let's say, good with numbers, we calculated that Bitcoin really should have a value of about $2.38, not a current $84,000. And the reason being, the reason it has any value at all is because the blockchain technology that has created Bitcoin is a good one. It allows for reasonably secure transactions, although we're discovering that it's not the encryption that matters really. It's just some idiot guarding a password or let's say a network where hackers can get in and steal Bitcoin in ways other than cracking the encryption. And of course there is some question now as to whether AI is going to be cracking, allow some fifth grader to hack Bitcoin itself. So, all right, so nobody could convince me. I've never heard a good argument for why Bitcoin should be worth anything. And the only argument that anybody's making boils down to it's scarce, which to me is not what I would call money. So, but putting that all of that aside, you know, I've had very accurate forecasts on Bitcoin. The way my hidden pivot system works, the more violent a market is, the easier it is to nail the swings. The swing highs and lows are very easy to get. And I do have, for someone who doesn't believe at all in Bitcoin, who thinks it's a fraud, I still have a target up there around 144,000. That's kind of my highest number. But in the meantime, Bitcoin has come down pretty hard. It's been basically downhill since mid-December, when it topped all-time high at 108,000 and change. So since then, it came down to a low of about 76,000 recently, but I think it's going to fall into the low to mid 60s, really, before it turns around. So I think we've got further to go, and what I view as a corrective move. But I'm also open to the possibility that the 108,000 we saw in December may turn out to be the all-time high for Bitcoin. It's the same as saying that the big top is in. We're in a bear market for stocks too, because Bitcoin is no longer. It takes a while for Bitcoin to get up a good head of steam to be so full of itself that it leads the market. So it hasn't been leading the market lately. It's really been the powers that be that manipulate the Bitcoin. They're sort of in a go-along mood right now, not feeling so feisty that they would take Bitcoin to new highs. So we're going to have to see new highs in the broad stock averages before Bitcoin climbs to new highs, if it does.
Is it safe for governments to start to put some of their national treasury into cryptocurrencies?
Well, government has been revealed mostly as a fraud. I mean, that's part of the Trump project. You know, it goes back to federalism and the idea that the states can do just fine and let the government build interstate highways and things like that. So I don't really get much concerned with what the quote unquote government is going to do with money. You know, there are interesting theories that Bitcoin could be part of a new money system, and I'd like to say that Trump will head that off, but he's actually supportive of it to the extent that Bitcoin gives you one more type of bullshit currency that you can expand to infinity. That's the and I think that would appeal to Trump. He's not exactly a money disciplinarian, and so Bitcoin would be an option for quote-unquote government to use in its money system, simply because it gives you a real easy way to pump crap money into the system to inflate it. And a lot of the things that Trump is doing in the let's say the financial realm are pegged to leveraging certain assets that we have. One would be gold. We still haven't had that look into Fort Knox as he promised, but if we have any tonnage there at all, with gold up around $5,000 an ounce, it becomes a resource, a form of collateral that the U.S. could use to get debt under control, to effectively pay down some of our debt. And you and I talked the last time about a corresponding part of that plan that would tap into Americans' home equity by way of, the government would essentially take out a home equity loan on your house, but it would give you a certificate to hold. It would be a long-term bond. You would, the coupons that you would clip would essentially pay you. You wouldn't lose money on your house. And as skeptical as I am about the government hawking anything more than it's hawked already, if the long-term note that it gave you for being able to use the equity in your home, if it were partially backed by gold, even I could be on board with that plan.
Copper has been on a real climb. Is that going to continue?
I guess. I'm not a copper expert. Let me take a look at the chart here. It's interesting. It made a major top at a little above $5 a pound back in May, and it came down a dollar to $4 a pound. And it's made sort of a big W on the chart, and we are, as I speak, we are exactly at that high that occurred back in May. So we're at the threshold of a breakout, and you know what? I'm going to look at a really long-term chart here, because that was the daily, and maybe I'll get a better picture here. All right, so when I look at the monthly chart in copper, I can project much higher than the uncertain number that I get with the daily chart. So to give you a number that your audience can bank on, I think there are indications of copper going to $6.18 a pound, maybe 19 cents. And it was a great buy. I wish I'd seen this. I wish I'd called up this chart. Let's see, it would have been back in August of 2024. Copper was trading at $3.90 a pound, and I'm looking at my chart here, and it gave a glow-in-the-dark, like 150 decimal buy here signal at $3.90. So I really wish I'd been on board for that, but I think we're going to $6.19 a pound.
Hmm. Will Tesla stock recover?
No, only partly, and I hate to see guys like Vance and all those clowns dance around on the idea that anything that they've done has hurt Tesla. Even these parking lot fires are not really the Tesla's weakness had nothing to do with his politics. I don't think. I think for every idiot that's going to boycott Tesla just because Musk makes them. There's someone else saying, well, I'm going to be patriotic and buy myself a Tesla. But Tesla hit a high just under 500. That occurred back in, December. And since then, it's come all the way down. The recent low, or a bit off the low, but the low was $217. So Tesla got more than cut in half, but the reason had nothing to do with, even though the timing was coincidental, it had nothing to do with the Doge regimen and all of Musk's chainsaw cutting. It was really just factors in the EV market, electric vehicle market. Number one, China is getting to the point where even if you took the 100% tariff that is there on electric vehicles and doubled it, you said everybody who wants a Chinese EV is going to have to pay a 200% tariff. Well, the Chinese are still going to be competitively priced. That's how it's going. They're really the major maker now of EVs and supported by a literally captive domestic market. So everybody in China buys an EV. But there's real problems, you know, because we're seeing that these EVs get discarded if there's fairly simple collision work needed that somehow impacted the power supply. There are very few mechanics that can even work on it. We've had, the Hertz decided it was going to eliminate EVs, and that put a lot of pressure on the market. So much pressure, in fact, that you could have bought any Tesla you wanted, any model, $25,000, but that pressure will still exist. It's like, what do you do? How much value does that Tesla have when it needs a new battery pack? So we're at that point in the cycle where a lot of people are discovering the answer to that, and it's the answer is not much. You know, a buddy of mine who bought a Tesla Plaid for, I think it was $140,000. I don't think he could get 40 out of it now. And so the resale value thing is a real problem, and the chip could be the Achilles heel of the Tesla. There are chips in the Tesla that do all kinds of things, some of them seemingly very important, like keeping the tires on the road when you're peeling out with perhaps 3 G's of force. It's like a rocket sled. But then there are other things. My friend got a new Tesla because the chip that controlled the retraction of the seatbelt ceased to work, and they could not get a new chip. So the chip thing is really, that's a vulnerability now for all car makers. It's not just EVs, but there's so many things that are tending to undermine the value of EVs, and of course the one the the 800-pound gorilla is that the buyers aren't so stoked anymore either. The subsidies are kind of ending or diminishing, ironically, partly through a Trump edict that would go against his good buddy Musk. So demand for EVs has diminished, and all these there's so many sovereign countries that are still wanting to go gung-ho, full speed ahead with EVs, that we still haven't sort of hit the wall there either. So there's supply and demand factors impacting on EVs, particularly the leader, Tesla, that are they have yet to play out. So I think Tesla is that high up near 500, that's going to stand for quite some time, if not forever. The actual high was 488, by the way.
NVIDIA, can they withstand all this competition now from much more affordable Chinese chips?
Well, you know, when that story first hit 6 weeks ago, whenever it was, 8 weeks ago, I remember there was a piece in Zero Hedge. Zero Hedge is sometimes prone to exaggeration, but this piece, this article, essay, said that it noted that the Chinese came out with an announcement that they were doing something with AI that was the equal of anything in the U.S., but they'd done it a lot cheaper, and that it would be open sourced, and the implication being that the U.S. model, which is develop AI in some proprietary way, closed source, that allows the companies that control the technology to charge you each time you use it. So here come the Chinese with something so cheap and wonderful and powerful that they're going to be able to sort of, they'll be able to give it away, give AI away. And so this was a huge shock to U.S. markets, because there has been, when you count all the side action in the AI game, it's literally trillions of dollars that was being at least hypothetically deflated by this announcement from China. So as expected, the impact on U.S. stocks lasted for all of about 3 hours. You know, we had one monstrous sell-off right after the announcement, but then stocks, well, the whole AI sector has been on the mend since. As expected, from day one, the U.S. spinmeisters hit the Chinese story with everything they had. You know, every source, every expert, every editorial board was in there saying, no, the Chinese, the whole thing's overrated. Some actually accused the Chinese of fraud, which is hardly a stretch, but they were saying the Chinese bought quite a few more NVIDIA chips than they had said to achieve what they said they had achieved, and that they'd spent a great deal more money getting to the point of being competitive with the U.S. And Musk chimed in with, my AI can blow away anything the Chinese are capable of. And so the whole fear climate about the Chinese announcement being the end of the world, that just kind of receded. All right, so at the time, I looked at it and I thought, well, nobody's going to know the answer to that question. Are the Chinese really at the threshold of taking on or beating the U.S. in AI, but with much less investment? And since nobody can really answer that question, I said, let's watch NVIDIA shares, and that'll give us the answer. You know, if NVIDIA falls, then the Chinese story is true. If NVIDIA climbs, then it is false. And the stock market being clever the way it is, I had the swings nailed exactly in NVIDIA. When it got hit with the DeepSeek news, it came down from an initial high of about, I think it was one, let me give you the number here, 153, let's call it. So it came down to 114 or so, and I said that it would eventually fall to $103.49, I think that my number was. And I also said that if it rallied in the meantime to 140-something and change, that you definitely should get short there. So all of that was spot on. They were dead center bullseyes going in either direction. And the stock eventually came down to not my 103 target, but it came down to 104 and change. So I got pretty close there. It's rallied again. And so I wind up not really knowing whether the story's true or not, because there's a complicating factor that over this period, this last quarter, NVIDIA released a chip, and as far as I understand it, they botched the price. They priced it way too high, and that really took its toll on the market, and that is what drove it down to close to my 103 target, not the story about China, how China was going to wreck the U.S. model. So with all that said, the jury is still out. You know, if the news from China was essentially true, that they're breathing down our necks, then NVIDIA has seen its highs, it will be a huge deflationary event for the stock market bubble that was blown in AI-related issues.
Rick, anything else we should be keeping a close eye on right now?
I guess Trump. It's a lot of fun to watch from day to day. Trump battling it out with these schmuck district judges, but they're going to lose. They're losing pretty much every round, and eventually it's going to dawn on them that they're going to have to work with the president to get things done. And even by the standards of the most case-hardened never-Trumper or Trump derangement syndrome nutcase, they're going to have to come around, because see, Trump's doing things that are not even disagreeable as far as the nut jobs go. So it's keep your eye on Trump, because it's really, that's where everything is happening.
Rick, thank you so much for speaking with us.
And thank you, Jim, for the time and the encouragement. And it's always a pleasure to connect with your audience.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks. His website, rickackerman.com. If you have any questions for Rick, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.